This episode of Therapy Insiders is brought to you by WebPT, the ultimate EMR for physical therapists. Give them a call at 866-221-1870 for a free demo. Check them out on the web at webpt.com/podcast. And if you're interested in business, we talk about plenty of business on this podcast, you definitely want to check out ascend2015.com, the ultimate rehab therapy business summit. It's going to have some of the biggest, best, brightest names in the field. I'll be there. You definitely want to be there. Check it out. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders from the UpDoc Media family. I'm Dr. Gene Chirac-Abrad, here today with one of my colleagues from UpDoc Media, Dr. Ben Fung, Erson Religioso, and Joe Palmer are out vacationing, those bums. So Ben is diligently filling in, and I'm sure he'll contribute one for two, Ben, but no pressure.
Not at all. It'll be good.
So we've covered a ton of topics and back and forth between business, some clinical stuff, but we keep getting sucked in to the business world for a lot of reasons, because it's an important topic for one, but two, because people keep asking us about it. People, and when I say people, I mean on Twitter and in the physical therapy realm, but even other healthcare professionals. I mean, we've got some hits from chiropractors. Yes, don't shiver, physical therapists. We do have some chiropractors that listen. Yoga, other healthcare and fitness professionals. And business is kind of a universal topic. Doesn't matter what field you're in, you have to have good business skills. Ben, obviously you have both worlds. You are a clinician with your DPT, but you also have an MBA. So you know the importance of both. And so does our guest on this podcast today. Our guest is making his triumphant return, is Larry Benz. And Larry, we've talked last time, you have an extensive business background, but just to refresh our listeners, first of all, thanks for coming back. I guess we didn't scare you off too much last time, but refresh our listeners on your business background.
Sure. First of all, thank you for inviting me again. You guys have a great podcast. I'm a listener and enjoy the banter and the humor and the variety of topics.
Well, thank you.
I guess my business background, it's a kind of a loaded question. I guess I can proceed on that educationally. So I'm a physical therapist who's got a master's in business from Ohio State University. And I was odd in that I went back to business school probably long after what most people would consider a fairly successful private practice. I think we had about 18 locations then. And I think that was a good thing, because business school is a very traditional academic setting. And I went to an executive MBA, and it's one of those situations where there's not many entrepreneurs in the class. So I learned a valuable lesson, and it's one that I pass on certainly to my kids and others that are pursuing business schools, that I think you ought to wait. I think you ought to wait at least 3-4 years. In fact, I think the best business schools in the U.S. are encouraging students to wait a few years before you go back. So you have a perspective, and you have a viewpoint that you can settle through debate and deliberation, and steep with case studies and Harvard Business Review case studies, and try to make it applicable to your own domain. So I have I'm very classically trained in that sense, and I've been kind of a lifelong learner. I started a private practice in the late 1980s, and like most private practitioners, we learned by school of fire. Along the way, just in terms of my experience, I was an Army physical therapist before that, so I have worked for the government as a PT, and so I've kind of gone from both extremes, and we migrate in the education space. And so for the last, 6-7 years, we've got over 300 graduates of a program that's an executive management program in private practice management, which is a mouthful even of itself, so we refer to it as EPPM. And it's private practices, owners, in some cases they're first lieutenants, and we go through a very classic business mentality. We looked at business programs throughout the country, Harvard Owners Managers Program, EMBA programs, and try to distill what was the best sort of pedagogy of putting in place a program. So we've got strategy and accounting, business plan competition. It's a year long. It's got an optional TDPT. So it's a lot of fun. So sorry for going in so many directions there.
How dare you? How dare you have so much business background, Larry? Good Lord. I think that's fantastic, and there's a lot to talk about, and we'll get to actually our first Twitter question in a second, but I think it's important to highlight the MBA and also to look at a different perspective. So is that good English? Me, myself.
Is that two or three of you?
Me, myself, and I. So that's a funny movie, but that's a whole different story. I don't have classical business background, but I have two businesses. I have Verve LLC that I started, and we created a product, and UpDoc Media, which is a media company. But what I've done is the classical business knowledge that I lack, I find and partner strategic partnerships with people that do, like Ben. And so let me ask you this, and this is actually from Scott McAfee. He said, how has getting your MBA influenced the way you practice / view physical therapy? Because me, without an MBA, I look at physical therapy from a entrepreneurial, from a startup type of mindset. These are the metrics we need. This is how we get people, you know, CPA, cost per acquisition. So I'm looking at almost selling a product versus necessarily physical therapy. But how has the MBA influenced you?
That's a great question. And again, I'll just remind the listeners here that I went back to MBA when I had already been in private practice for a number of years. So I have a perspective that might be different than others who are more sort of academic pedigree sort of folks relative to an MBA and have gone kind of a investment banking or an approach that's, you know, a little more structured. So I was an entrepreneur before I was an MBA. And the point I think on that is, so my level of appreciation is this. I learned some things when I was in MBA school that had I learned them before I did them, I would not have done them. The flip side of that is I did a lot of things before I got my MBA that had I learned an MBA would have avoided, and that would have actually hurt my business quite a bit. So entrepreneurs are generally successful because they will themselves in success. They have a pursuit and a passion, and they can't be defeated. Now, that's a great thing, except that when you figure the complexities of healthcare is not as simple as open it, build it, and people will come. So where an MBA really does help you is it shapes you. It gives you a perspective and a point of reference and an ability to say strategically, where are we at? What are the suppliers, the buyers? What are the barriers of entry here? It forces you to go through a more rigor and process that you probably wouldn't have done. It also classically trains you in some of the more marketing items. It exposes you to business case studies that allow you to reflect and apply to your own particular situation. So it does round you. It is certainly not a requirement. I'm a better business person today because I do have an MBA, but had I not had one, I think I would have been okay, as long as you continue to learn and refine your skills, your teamwork, your collaboration, and all sort of the tasks and knowledge things that we need for the 21st century here. But an MBA is important when you get to aspects of leadership, finance, accounting. And if you do not have one, you need to appreciate those areas of skills and competencies that you need to augment your team with. It's not a mystery as to why the leading CEOs in the United States are all, you know, top 20, top 30 business school graduates. But it's certainly not a requirement for healthcare, but I do think it can help differentiate you if you let it and if you are open to the learning and open to, the different environments.
And then if you don't want to stick with traditional healthcare, like treating patients or running a clinic, there's still, once you get that MBA, but you still have the background as a clinician, I mean, it opens up other doors, like for you, Ben, right? With UpDoc Media and your other ventures.
Certainly with UpDoc Media. And I think that, you know, I couldn't agree more with you, Larry, about the MBA being a rigor and a perspective, almost a language in and of its own, both from an academic and a professional perspective. And just to echo off, you know, the value behind the finance and the accounting and the more strategic levels of marketing than what we know in the entrepreneurial sides of marketing, which is, you know, in the front lines, you gain this view of, you know, healthcare, of physical therapy, or whatever industry that you're in, from a big picture perspective, where you can start to affect change at strategic levels, which I think is a perspective that we lose in a lot of professional settings, like in PT school and whatnot. And I think that one of the biggest advantages of having an MBA in our field of healthcare is that all of a sudden we're recognized as almost as a voice of authority, as an equal, as something that C-level executives are willing to listen to us beyond us having clinical doctorates.
So, like, you started to mention that having that MBA is a lead into not only knowing how to run business, but how to get people to your business, which involves marketing, and marketing is a big component, or branding is a big component of marketing. And if you don't deliver a package that resonates with people and people understand what it is, that it's you and differentiate yourself from competitors and other businesses and et cetera, then you don't really have something that you can continue to grow and kind of roll forward. So how do you, with kind of an MBA background or not, experiences that you've had running your businesses, how do you brand, and what do you perceive as effective branding?
Well, it's a great question, because it's relative to the whole MBA discussion, right? So, I mean, classically, if you really look at branding as a definition, you'd have to apply a financial metric to it. And it's literally the difference between your book price and your price in your market. That difference, or that delta, would be attributed to the goodwill of your brand. So that's how you would classically learn a component of branding in business school. And then you might certainly learn other aspects of it in business case studies and marketing case studies, and those associated with it. So to get to a deeper level on the question, I view branding much differently today than probably I first did when I was out in private practice. And so the brand, literally, the way I view it now is it's a very experiential and a very emotional or sensual. You know, how can I gather somebody to, when they think of physical therapy, or when they've been referred, or when they have a knee problem, an ache and pain, a sprain and strain, how could the next light go off in their head that say, I want to go to Texas Physical Therapy Specialist, or PT Central, or Breakthrough, or Pro Rehab? That to me is the challenge, because when I'm in an airport and I smell coffee and I see Starbucks, I don't even need to see the sign of Starbucks. I know that that's where I'm going. And the best brands in the world, whether it's an IKEA or a Google, or certainly Apple, or Facebook, Twitter, they do so because there's an action component to it. There's something that resonates with you that says, I'm going to utilize this product or service, because that's where my default mode of thinking comes in. So if you really put it in that perspective, what we try to do in physical therapy is get folks to, when they have this next inkling that they might need physical therapy, think they need physical therapy, or actually do need physical therapy, that their default mode of thinking is our brand, our clinic name. So therein lies the challenge. First thing I think you have to do is you have to get the care right, because at the end of the day, when people talk about word of marketing, I think they overplay it conceptually. At the end of the day, it's a component of branding, and arguably perhaps the most important component. We like to say in Kentucky that we like to milk our own cows first. And so our patients are, in part, our ambassadors relative to word of mouth. But more importantly, if you look at my fundamental definition, which is the default thinking one gets into when they think, perceive, or have a real need of physical therapy, it does start with the care. Okay? So you have to get the care right. And what I find happens is we get too reliant on this concept that word of mouth marketing is branding. It isn't. It's a subset. It's a component. It's a technique. It's a tactic, if you will. It's a gambit.
And is it a good tactic? Is it a good technique?
Yes, if executed right. And let me differentiate between where I personally believe that it's executed right and where it's not executed right. Here is where it's not executed right. I reflect back and I say, I gave that patient good care, therefore I'm going to have great word of mouth marketing. That is what I like to refer to as a hope and a prayer strategy, you know, which works great in the context of one's personal faith study. But to me, it doesn't work great in the context of business.
Because it's a passive approach.
It's a very, very passive approach. So how can I make that an active approach? And again, keeping in mind that it's only one strategy or gambit or technique in your overall branding strategy. But one of the things you can do, and one of the things that we find people don't do enough of, is they assume that patients will have good word of mouth. They'll assume that there's a referral in there, but they never ask for it. So we monitor that quite heavily. In fact, it's on our patient loyalty surveys. You know, did the physical therapist, you know, provide you with a free screening card or whatever the technique is? So we make sure that at the end of treatment, and this isn't a scripted requirement. It's a requirement, but the script can vary with the personality. The variability is all built around the people, right?
To make it authentic.
But at the end of the day, we want our physical therapist to say, you know, look, Mrs. Jones, if you think I've been of service to you, and this is certainly after you've shown them where they were and where they came in the intervention of physical therapy, what it supplied. And almost always the patient responds with, yes, this has just been a terrific experience. I've gotten better. I wasn't able to do this. Now I'm able to do that. And then you have to ask the question. And it kind of goes back to, I think, your introductory talk about business with Ben and, you know, sales or somebody relative to, if they don't have an MBA, they're thinking, well, why do they need one? It's just sales and it's just a product. In this context, they're probably correct in the sense that the therapist needs to ask them for the referral. If you think I've done you good, here's what I'd like you to do. If you know somebody that's got a condition just like you, or they've got an ache and pain, sprain, strain, or that you think they might have a physical therapy need, I'd like you to tell them about us. In fact, I'd like you to tell them to come see me. Here's a card. Here's a screen card. And if they come in, they'll see your name on it, my name on it, and we're not going to charge them anything for it. We're going to sit down and talk to them and have a conversation. And if they need physical therapy services, they come to the right place. If they need other medical services, we have the resources and the mechanism to recommend others to them. Now, that's still a technique, and that is not equal branding either. That's one of many that you might utilize. But when people use, as you called, a passive approach, they're not going to get any benefit from it. And in fact, it's a strategy that quite simply doesn't work. So what you have to do is use that in conjunction with some other means that involve everything from social media, marketing, advertising, lunch and learns. You have to have a multi-dimensional look at your market and see how that comes into play. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's how do I get the community of physicians, employers, patients, families, and friends to go into a default mode when they need my service.
And it's also tracking it, right? You have to, when you're doing branding and marketing, you have to be able to track because you want to know what your biggest ROI is. You don't want to just throw things at it. And we had a talk about this or chat about this on Twitter. And because I wrote out physical therapy, we're so big on evidence-based practice, but nobody ever does evidence-based branding or business, and which is the thing that statistics and metrics are everywhere in business, whether you're doing Facebook and you're doing posting. I mean, you can narrow it down to a little area of zip code there that you want to specify your branding or your ads going out to.
That's exactly right. You have to use the available big data that you have. You have to have lead measures. You have to have lag measures. A lot of folks are quite surprised. I get the question a lot, particularly in the strategy and finance class. They'll say, what is the first data you look at? What's the first metric that you look at? And they're going to assume I'm going to say something about, you know, growth or number of visits or, you know, compared to a prior month or something overly complex. And the first piece of data I look at in every one of our you know, facilities, we're up to almost 70 facilities now, is what percentage of that patient's new patients at months were former patients, friends and family of former patients. Number one statistic I look at, because I know that if I can get that number to 40 or 50%, and we're very methodical about that, I know it doesn't matter if, you know, the biggest orthopedic group in the world opens up across my street from me and they have their own PT clinic, because they're never going to be able to defeat somebody's default mode of where they're going to go when they need me.
Shocker, an Army guy being methodical. Never would have imagined. Let me ask you this, Ben, and then Larry as well. So again, I've been a practicing clinician for a few years, but I'm also, my mindset is products, retail, growing a media company. So my business branding mindset is a little bit differently. And to me, I break it down into three parts. I like to keep it as simple as possible. One, effective product. Because if you don't have an effective product, even if you sell something once, you won't get growth, scaling, and resale value on it. And that comes to the second point, is ROI, return on investment, not for you, but for the person purchasing your product. So if you're in physical therapy, the return on investment for the customer or patient is them getting better and then them having strategy to stay better, right? That's the big return on investment. And then you said this, Larry, which I think nobody says, or very few people say, is the emotional connection. The emotional connection to your company is branding. Once you have that emotional connection with the Starbucks, like you said, or that iPhone or whatever you have, that's your customer. You have an evangelist more than a customer. So Ben, how does a company, how does a clinic or anybody create that emotional connection between you as a business and the customer?
Well, I'm going to open up with something that should surprise nobody that knows me. And I think we should look to companies that do it very well, like Disney. You know, I think what we learned from, you know, the Walt Disney Company is that they use that share of mind experience, like Larry said, through emotional branding. And the way they do that is by becoming part of your life. I think that as clinicians, we are very good at being factual. We're also very good at being empathetic, but we don't go out of our way to bring that empathy as part of the care experience as a brand. You know, I think that because of evidence-based practice, we're so obsessed with the numerical value of what we can bring before and after care. But I think we forget to train ourselves, even at an organizational level, to develop a culture, whether it's in a firm, single standing, or if it's in, you know, a series of, say, 50 to 60 clinics, or even just as an entire profession of physical therapists, that part of the physical therapy experience, that share of mind brand experience, is an emotional care that you get through physical therapists and perhaps not anywhere else. I think a real action step that you can do is by having very specific, not quite spiels the way Disney does it, but perhaps content guidelines of what you can do upon the first visit, what you can do, even in the waiting room, where you can check on the people that are waiting so they can get great expectations from the entire experience. And perhaps most importantly, is the remembrance of the totality of that brand experience, the follow-up. You know, I like to spin it down to, you know, you need to manage the moment of the brand experience. You need to manage the outcome of the brand experience, and then you have to manage the memory of it.
This episode of Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, as we mentioned, the ultimate EMR for physical therapists. But what makes them the ultimate EMR, I'm sure you're wondering? I decided to ask Anne, a longtime user of WebPT. Here's what she had to say.
I really like the fact that I can send my notes right through WebPT. I can fax them to physicians so that they can see the plan of care and sign it and send it back. My logo is on everything that I send out, and it's all legible. So it really saves me a lot of time in the end, because I don't have calls back from either insurance companies or attorneys if it's, you know, a car accident, things like that, asking me to interpret my handwriting on anything.
WebPT, the ultimate EMR for physical therapists, because it's more than just notes. Check them out at 866-221-1870 for a free demo, or webpt.com/podcast. Absolutely. So a little side note, as soon as you said Disney, I started playing A Whole New World in my head, like on loop, because my son is three and he just started watching movies. So he's like watched Frozen a bunch of times. No, not all day, people. All right, we're good parents. He gets to watch a movie or TV like once you know, a week or something like that. But we wanted to show him Aladdin, and so we went on demand, like every single on demand that's possible. And but Disney has like this way of rolling out movies in certain times. So Aladdin wasn't coming out till September. So we showed him a clip on YouTube of the trailer, and it was a whole new world. So ever since then, that song's been stuck in my head. And now, you're welcome, it's stuck in everybody else's heads. So from a whole new world to an emotional connection, Larry, what about you? Yep. How do you build a connection with your customers in any business that you're into?
Yeah, so there are a couple different overall concepts. One is a concept of multiple touch points. We looked at this many times over the years. Where are the integration points where a patient contacts you and interacts with you? Everything from phone, fax, email now, web. Certainly they come in, they get greeted, they get cared for, they get rescheduled. And so these touch points have become a significant number. You know, in the old days, they'd call, then they'd come in. Then it became fax and they come in. Now it's still fax, but we get some by email, or they'll text you, or variety of services. We use a variety of techniques. And so we have to make sure that every one of those touch points have some level of expectation and design relative to our customer service principles, relative to our care principles, and that to the best extent that we can, we monitor them, and we're always cognizant of the emotional connection that we have with a patient. If they're 2 feet away and they're eyeball to eyeball, you better smile. If they're 10 feet away, you acknowledge them, and various rules that we have on that. And on top of that, you have to remember that what your job and your role is. So, you know, I would say to our marketing folks, for example, what I want you to be able to do with a physician group is when we get their referrals, I want to ask them the reasons in the initial stage of our relationship. And it's always the same. They're always very rational reasons. You're in network. You're across the streets. I can see your location here. You're on the provider directory list of the patient. But over time, your job as a marketing person, our job as an organization, our role through branding is to change it from a very rational reason to a reason that you cannot explain. And it becomes an emotional reason. Oh, I don't know. I just love those folks. That's why I send my patients there. They come back and they tell me great things. I know because they've told me that I need to go there if I ever have a physical therapy need. So what happens is, you know, you're successful in a branding context if they go from a very rational explanation to a very irrational explanation. So that's rule number one. Rule number two, I think, is closely related to the definition. So if I have a definition in our company that our branding definition is the default mechanism somebody goes in when they have a perceived need, a real need, or a question about physical therapy, that opens the gate of creativity and opportunity for us to think about the levels of ways we can engage with our patient. So we do a pre-admission process where they get overwhelmed with pre-admission stuff, and it's a direct connection. So they're already getting aligned with their personal PT. They've already learned about them. We engage now with them through a patient engagement platform, not a home exercise program, you know, video program. There's a million of them. So we came about all these ideas not because we're smart or good business people, but because the way we've defined how we brand with a patient, it allows creativity to come in and say, you know, that's an additional way that we can get them emotionally connected and make them irrationally attached to us.
Absolutely. And I think those are all great points. To finish out this week, was my last day. Actually, today was my last day at the clinic that I was at. So I resigned a couple of weeks ago to focus on UpDoc Media and Verve and the Arc. And over the week, I've had patients coming in, and you know, patient brought me a framed picture of a butterfly she took because we talked about photography, and she wanted to give me something. Had, you know, patients crying. I had a patient make me moonshine. I don't know what that says about our conversations, but, and you know, jams and just things like that. And I really kind of drove that point home of that emotional connection that we make on that personal level, because we build those relationships and outcomes are fantastic, right? Because that's what people are there for. Again, that's the effective product. But emotional ROI, do people really enjoy coming to see you? Will they get out of bed when they had 8 hours of work and they were wiped out by their boss and they get home into their recliner? Will you get them out of their recliner knowing they'll have to come see you and work and do exercises? But will that emotional connection drive you over the edge? And that's our hashtag Project PT for you. For everyone listening, is really have that kind of emotional audit of your practice. Are you making emotional connections with your patients or customers if you're not a clinician? And let us know how you do those emotional connections. So tweet at us at UpDoc Media, at Dr. Ben Fung. I'm at Therapy Insiders. At Physical Therapy is Larry. And let us know how those emotional connections happen to you. Larry, thanks so much for joining us. I know you have a ton of stuff going on. You're always out and about. You're a busy guy. So we really appreciate you taking the time.
Anytime. Thank you, guys. And keep up the great work. You're doing some super things in the profession. I appreciate it personally, and I know our organization is appreciated it professionally.
That means a lot coming from you.
Thank you, Larry.
Ben, thanks for taking the time. And if you haven't checked us out yet, at updocmedia.com, the site is officially launched, with Therapy Insiders being on there and our three other podcasts, The Running Story with Amanda Loudon, The Strength Doc with Dr. John Russell, and of course, Business, Baseball, and Bourbon with Jerry Durham. So check those out. And of course, our own Dr. Ben Fung doing the blog. And we've had some really cool blog articles out there, including branding. So check us out. And as always, you know, we really appreciate reviews and your comments. So keep emailing us at therapyinsiders@gmail.com or info@updocmedia.com. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.